Section J, pulse polarography and alternating current polarography. To understand the basis of pulse polarography, we need to recall the way a classical polarogram is recorded. The polarograms we inspected in the previous section were obtained by slowly changing the potential of the dropping mercury electrode while continuously measuring the current flowing through it. The potential was changed by only a few millivolts during the 4 to 6 second lifetime of each drop, so that the measured current for each drop was essentially a current at constant electrode potential. The recorded polarogram was a collection of current time curves for a large number of individual drops, each curve being recorded at a slightly different potential until the potential range of interest had been covered. In what is termed normal pulse polarography, the recording procedure is altered, as is indicated in figure J1. Initially, the electrode potential is set at a value ahead of the polarographic wave so that no reduction of the reactant is proceeding. This initial potential is labeled EI on the ordinate axis of figure J1. Next, a potential step of 5 to 50 millivolts is applied in the direction that moves the electrode potential closer to the polarographic wave for the reactant. The potential is maintained at the new value for a few milliseconds and then returned again to its initial value. This programmed sequence of potential steps is continued, with each potential step having a somewhat larger magnitude than the preceding step, as shown in figure J1. The delay period between successive steps is synchronized with the period of the dropping mercury electrode, so that each potential step occurs at exactly the same point in the life of each mercury drop. The current that flows in response to each potential step is sampled and recorded at a time well after the step is applied, for an important reason that we shall soon explain. But first, note how the series of potential steps shown in figure J1 is related to the conventional DC polarogram for the same solution. The potential steps in figure J1 correspond to the labels on the potential axis of the conventional polarogram shown in figure J2. 0 represents the initial potential, and the other numbers at the bottom of figure J2 correspond to the successive steps indicated in figure J1. The current is sampled at the same time following each potential step, and you can see that as the number of steps increases, the potential is moved further and further into the polarographic wave. The rising part of the wave is encompassed, and finally the potential is stepped to values corresponding to the current plateau. Now, the reason for conducting the experiment in the way just described is pointed out in the next figure, J3, where the current necessary to charge up the double layer capacitance at the electrode and the Faradaic current, that is the current due to the reduction of the reactant, are both shown as a function of time. These two currents flow in response to each of the potential steps shown in figure J1. And as you can see, the two currents decrease with time at very different rates. The charging current, shown by the dashed line in figure J3, decays away with time much more rapidly than the Faradaic current. In equations J4 and J5, we see why this is so. Equation J4 is just the familiar Cottrell equation we derived in section D. It shows that the Faradaic current at an electrode of fixed area decreases with the inverse square root of time. This decrease, you will remember, is the result of the decay in the concentration gradient of the reactant next to the electrode, which controls its diffusion to the electrode surface. But the charging current, the other component of the current that results when the potential step is applied, decreases exponentially with time, according to equation J5. The magnitude of the charging current is equal to the size of the potential step divided by R, the portion of the ohmic resistance of the solution through which the current is passing that is not compensated by whatever electronic apparatus is being used. The ratio of the potential step to the uncompensated resistance is then multiplied by an exponential term involving time and RC, the product of the resistance, and C, the capacitance of the electrode, which depends on its area. Equation J5 is the equation one would derive by examination of the circuit shown in J6, which is a reasonably good, simple model of the way electrode-electrolyte interfaces behave in the absence of any reactant. Essentially, we have the capacitance of the electrode, C, in series with the uncompensated solution resistance, R, and the potential step, delta E, is supplied by the battery when the switch is closed. The resulting current will obey an equation similar to J5, and so does the charging current at the electrode in a pulse polarographic experiment. In a normal pulse polarographic experiment, the difference in the rate of decay of the two components of the current, shown in figure J3, is taken advantage of to obtain enhanced sensitivity. After each potential step is applied, a brief time period is allowed to elapse before the current is measured. In this way, time is allowed for the charging current to fall essentially to zero, while the more slowly decreasing Faradaic current is still substantial, and it therefore constitutes a much larger fraction of the total measured current. Since it is the Faradaic current that is proportional to the concentration of the reactant one is trying to measure, the sensitivity of the method is increased significantly by operating in this way. In table J8, the typical values of experimental parameters, listed in J7, have been inserted into equations J4 and J5 to calculate the two components of the current. You'll note that as the delay period between the time that the potential step is applied and the time that the current is measured is increased, the ratio of the charging current to the Faradaic current goes down very rapidly. 0.2 milliseconds after the potential step is applied, the charging current is almost 1,000 times greater than the Faradaic current of interest for this particular example. But this ratio drops rapidly with time. After 0.55 milliseconds, the two components of the current are more nearly equal. And if 1 millisecond is allowed to elapse before the current is measured, only a negligible fraction of the measured current will be due to the residual charging current. At this point, the measured current will be essentially entirely Faradaic, and therefore directly proportional to the concentration of the species one is interested in. It is this ability to discriminate between the Faradaic and non-Faradaic components of currents that has attracted interest in the normal pulse polarographic method. Figure J9 shows the kind of format in which a normal pulse polarogram is ordinarily obtained. The solid curve at the bottom of the figure is the classical polarogram, shown without current fluctuations, that one might obtain with the dropping mercury electrode in a very dilute solution of a reactant. A very small wave is observed, and a sizable fraction of the current on its plateau is due to the residual charging current associated with the changing area of the electrode. Curve B, the series of points, represents the normal pulse polarogram for the same solution. The discrete points are the values of the current measured 4 to 5 milliseconds after each potential step was applied. The initial potential in each case lay ahead of the point at which the reduction of the reactant commenced. And you note that not only are the currents larger than those obtained in the classical DC polarogram, because less time was available for the decay of the concentration gradient at the electrode surface, but in addition, the limiting current for curve B on the plateau tends to be somewhat flatter because of the much smaller contribution from charging currents. The residual current for the pulse polarogram is not shown, but it would be well below the dashed line representing the residual current for the conventional DC polarogram. The concentration of the reactant in the solution can be determined from the value of the current on the flat plateau of the pulse polarogram more precisely than is possible with curves such as A in figure J9. Although the normal pulse polarographic method accomplishes a major increase in analytical sensitivity, it doesn't solve the problem of residual impurities. If there are other species present in the solution, which are reduced along with the reactant, they will contribute to the normal pulse polarographic current, just as they do in classical DC polarography, and therefore result in error. And a further modification in the pulse polarographic method has been devised to decrease or even eliminate this source of error. In this alternative mode of pulse polarography, instead of applying a series of potential steps of increasing magnitude, the potential program shown in figure J10 is employed. And this mode of operation is termed differential pulse polarography. The idea is much the same as in normal pulse polarography, in that a series of small potential steps is applied to the electrode, and after each step, a short time is allowed to elapse before the resulting current is measured. But in differential pulse polarography, instead of using potential steps of ever-increasing height, as in normal pulse polarography, the potential steps employed are all of the same magnitude, typically 5 to 50 millivolts. And at the same time that these potential steps are being applied to the electrode, the DC potential of the electrode is slowly changed so that we have a series of potential steps of constant height superimposed on a linear potential ramp, as is illustrated in figure J10. And as indicated in J10, one potential step is applied during the lifetime of each successive mercury drop, usually near the end of the drop's life. A second important feature of differential pulse polarography is that the parameter which is output by a pulse polarograph is the difference between two currents. The current is measured just before the application of each potential step, and then again several milliseconds after each potential step is applied. The first current is subtracted from the second electronically, and the pulse polarograph outputs their difference. This procedure is continued as the DC potential is slowly changed until the entire range of the DC polarogram is covered. By operating in this way, one obtains what amounts to the derivative of a classical DC polarogram. If there is a residual DC current flowing because of the presence of impurities, such as oxygen, which are reduced in the same potential range as the reactant, this residual DC current will not contribute to the differential pulse polarographic current that is measured, because once the DC potential of the electrode reaches a value that corresponds to the diffusion-limited plateau on the current potential curve for the impurity, the residual current will not be affected by the small potential steps that are applied to the electrode. Figure J11 shows a DC polarogram and a corresponding differential pulse polarogram. The latter resembles a derivative of the DC polarogram, although the position of the maximum current matches the half-wave potential of the DC polarogram only if the magnitude of the imposed potential steps is kept quite small, 1 or 2 millivolts, for example. The current decreases to low values again when the potential reaches the plateau of the current potential curve, because the small changes in potential produce no further changes in current. These general features of differential pulse polarograms will be altered in cases where the electrode process is complicated by non-Nernstein behavior or coupled chemical kinetics, although such complications can usually be circumvented sufficiently to permit satisfactory analyses to be carried out by means of differential pulse polarography. The mode of recording the differential pulse polarogram that I have just described has a lot of attractive features to it. The peaked current response resembles an optical or NMR spectrum, which helps to define the peak potential accurately and adds to the ease of measurement of the maximum current. It becomes possible to determine very small concentrations of a reactant in the presence of much larger concentrations of either other reactants or residual impurities, because the differential pulse polarographic mode responds only to the rising portions of polarographic waves, even in the presence of much larger but potential independent currents. Note also that each peak potential in a differential pulse polarogram is diagnostic of the particular reactant being reduced, just as half-wave potentials are useful for qualitative analysis in DC polarography. Thus, differential pulse polarography can provide a simultaneous qualitative and quantitative estimate of the concentration of the reactant being studied. Well, let's look now at a few examples of differential pulse polarography in action. Figure J12 shows the application of differential pulse polarography to the determination of arsenic in the form of arsenious acid in 1 molar hydrochloric acid. The lower curve, labeled blank in this figure, is the differential pulse polarogram recorded in the absence of any arsenic, and the upper curve is the corresponding polarogram obtained in the presence of 8 × 10⁻⁶ molar arsenic. 3 peaks are apparent in this differential pulse polarogram. The one on the left, the largest of the three, results from the reduction of arsenic 3 to elemental arsenic. The smaller peak on the far right represents the further reduction of arsenic from the elemental stage to arsine. And the narrower peak between the two extreme peaks is an artifact associated with some induced stirring of the electrolyte at the electrode surface. This peak isn't useful for analytical purposes and can be ignored. The point to note from this figure is that at an arsenic concentration of only 600 parts per billion, an easily measured response is obtained in the differential pulse polarographic mode, which is readily usable for accurate analytical determinations of arsenic. The other parameters listed in the caption to figure J12 should be understandable on the basis of what we have said about pulse polarography. The scan rate, indicated at 5 millivolts per second, is the rate at which the electrode potential is slowly changed while the differential pulse polarogram was recorded. The drop time of 2 seconds is the lifetime of each mercury drop electrode, which is mechanically controlled in pulse polarography. And the modulation amplitude, indicated as 50 millivolts, is simply the magnitude of the small potential steps that were applied in this differential pulse polarographic experiment. Figure J13 gives another example of the application of differential pulse polarography, in this case to the analysis of a mixture of antibiotics. Here, a solution containing chloramphenicol and tetracycline produced 4 separate pulse polarographic peaks. The one on the left of the figure corresponding to chloramphenicol, and the 3 on the right arising from the reduction of tetracycline in several steps. Figure J14 shows the concentration dependence of the tetracycline peak that appears at about -1 volt. And in figure J15, the peak currents for a series of tetracycline solutions are plotted against the concentration of tetracycline in parts per million to obtain an analytical calibration curve. Note that the calibration curve is quite linear and the intercept is very near to the origin, indicating that differential pulse polarography is highly suitable as an analytical method for the determination of tetracycline and other electroactive antibiotics in mixtures with good accuracy. Table J16 gives some other analytical applications of differential pulse polarography that have been published, just to give you a feeling for the scope of the method. A variety of drugs, in addition to antibiotics, have been determined by this method in biological fluids. Cadmium and other heavy metals in foods, such as dried milk, have been determined with good accuracy by the differential pulse polarographic method at levels much below those that are suitable for analysis by ordinary DC polarography. Sulfur dioxide in the atmosphere has been determined by means of pulse polarography, and in the petroleum field, the differential pulse polarographic method has proven quite satisfactory for the determination of trace metals, such as nickel and vanadium, in petroleum products. The degree to which differential pulse polarography enhances analytical sensitivity is exemplified by the case shown in figure J17, in which a differential pulse polarogram for a 4 × 10⁻⁸ molar solution of cadmium is shown. And as you can see, a readily detectable differential pulse polarographic peak for cadmium is observed for this very dilute solution. If the same solution had been examined with classical DC polarography, the charging current would completely mask the Faradaic current due to the cadmium reduction, and no analytically useful result would be obtained. The pulse polarographic method is thus much superior for analysis of cadmium in this concentration range. An even further increase in the sensitivity of the differential pulse polarographic method is possible if it is combined with so-called anodic stripping analysis. The resulting method is carried out in two stages. In the first stage, a hanging mercury drop electrode, that is, not a dropping mercury electrode, but a suspended mercury drop electrode of fixed area, or a mercury-plated graphite electrode, is used. The electrode is placed in the solution to be analyzed and held at a potential where the metal ions of interest that may be present in very low concentrations are accumulated as metal amalgams by being reduced at the mercury electrode. This deposition stage is typically continued for periods of a few minutes, during which the solution is stirred so that the metal ions to be determined are concentrated as amalgams in the mercury electrode. Then, during the second stage of the experiment, the metal amalgams present in the mercury electrode are anodically removed from the electrode by performing differential pulse polarography, with the DC potential of the electrode scanned in the more positive anodic direction. The enhancement in sensitivity that can be achieved in this way is shown in the next two figures. J18 shows a standard differential pulse polarogram for a sample of ordinary tap water. And though some peaks are evident in this differential pulse polarogram, the currents are too small to yield anything but very rough analytical results. J19 shows what happens if the same sample of tap water is analyzed by the two-step process I just described. First, the mercury electrode is held at a negative potential, minus 1.2 volts or so, where most of the metal ions present in the tap water are reduced to amalgams in the mercury electrode. And then, as shown in figure J19, the potential is scanned from minus 1.2 volts to more positive potentials. The first metal oxidized from the amalgam is zinc. The zinc metal atoms in the amalgam are oxidized to zinc ions, which dissolve in the electrolyte. The current is now anodic instead of cathodic, but in all other respects, a standard differential pulse polarogram is obtained. You see, a very nice peak develops for zinc with an easily measured peak current, even though it would be hard to identify the zinc peak current in the differential pulse polarogram shown in J18. Another peak is observed at the potential score corresponding to the oxidation of copper. Incidentally, I believe the copper concentration given in this original figure must be erroneous if the concentration given for zinc is correct. And the inset in figure J19 shows that if an even longer deposition time is employed, 5 1/4 minutes instead of 1 1/4, the much smaller quantity of lead present in the tap water sample also gives an anodic peak current. The peak current shown corresponds to a lead concentration of only 1.5 parts per billion, so that a very high sensitivity indeed is achievable by combining differential pulse polarography with this pre-deposition procedure, followed by anodic stripping of the deposited metals from the electrode. This method has become extremely popular rather recently, and each year a larger number of applications of this method appear in the literature. I have included two more examples to show the scope of the method. Figure J20 shows the use of the combined differential pulse anodic stripping procedure in the analysis of a mixture of metal ions. In this case, instead of a hanging mercury drop electrode, a wax impregnated graphite electrode was employed, which was then mercury plated. The solution being analyzed contained only 2 × 10⁻⁹ molar zinc, cadmium, lead, and copper, but as you can see, sizable peak currents were obtained for each of the metals present. Finally, in figure J21, an analysis for lead in human blood is shown. The blood sample is first treated to prepare an aqueous solution, and then that solution is analyzed by deposition into the mercury electrode, followed by anodic stripping of the deposited lead. You can see that even at 28 parts per billion, the normal level of lead in blood, a readily detectable peak is obtained. And as higher levels of lead are added to the blood sample, the corresponding differential pulse polarographic peak currents increase. Well, I hope by now that you are persuaded that these variations on the classical DC polarographic method, that is normal pulse polarography, differential pulse polarography, and anodic stripping combined with differential pulse polarography, have really provided an enormous increase in the sensitivity of the polarographic method. In many instances, these newer pulse polarographic methods are fully competitive with the best alternative analytical methods for trace metal determination. To conclude this section, I'd like to say a few words about another kind of polarography, which is in widespread use, so-called alternating current polarography. Figures J22 through J24 show you a bird's eye view of the kind of measurements that are made in alternating current polarography. J22 shows the standard classical DC polarogram, and J23 is the corresponding alternating current polarogram. In alternating current polarography, the DC potential of the electrode is scanned, as in ordinary polarography, while an alternating potential of small amplitude and frequency omega is also applied to the electrode. The alternating current that flows in response to the applied alternating potential is what is detected and recorded. As in differential pulse polarography, a kind of derivative of the DC polarogram is obtained. The alternating current having the same frequency as that of the applied alternating potential is recorded to obtain a so-called fundamental harmonic AC polarogram, as shown in J23. If the alternating current component having a frequency twice that of the applied frequency is monitored, a double peak second harmonic AC polarogram results, as shown in figure J24. And the peak currents in either fundamental or second harmonic AC polarograms are directly related to the concentration of reactants and can be used for analytical purposes. The attractive features of AC polarography are that it provides a particularly good discrimination between the Faradaic and non-Faradaic components of the current. It turns out that the non-Faradaic component of the alternating current, the double layer charging current, bears a different phase relationship with respect to the applied alternating potential than does the Faradaic current, so that by phase-sensitive detection of the alternating current, a good discrimination between the Faradaic and non-Faradaic components of the total current is obtained. The method is also advantageous in the analysis of mixtures of ions which produce closely spaced waves that are difficult to resolve in DC polarography. The second harmonic mode of AC polarography is particularly useful for this kind of discrimination between closely spaced polarographic waves. Well-separated second harmonic AC polarograms can be obtained in cases where the DC polarograms give little or no indication that there were two waves present. And finally, oxygen removal is often unnecessary when AC polarograms are being recorded, because the oxygen electrode reaction only gives an AC response at very positive potential, near the value where oxygen is reduced in the DC polarogram. If reactions occurring at more negative potentials are being studied, oxygen removal may not be necessary. So these features make AC polarography an attractive analytical method, although not as wide in scope and not as inherently sensitive as the pulse polarographic method that we discussed a little earlier. In addition to these purely analytical applications, AC polarography is also quite useful in making most of the same sorts of kinetic and equilibrium measurements that were discussed in connection with the other techniques. Thus, the kinetics of chemical reactions coupled to the electrode reaction, both those that precede and those that follow the charge transfer step, the kinetics of the charge transfer step itself, and equilibrium constants for the formation of complex ions by the reactant are all problems to which AC polarography has been successfully applied. These and other related ways in which AC polarography serves the interests of electroanalysts are treated very thoroughly and lucidly by one of the method's most convincing advocates in the general references cited on the next page of the manual, and I feel confident in referring you to that source for further descriptions of the utility of this versatile and widely employed technique.
Please turn to slide 10 for the continuation of this ACS audio course.